Would you go with me to verse 12? May I remind you that in Matthew 15, 18, and 19, that all of the source of our problems is in and out of one's own heart. Out of the heart a man defileth himself. And I want you to note, and for me to note in verse 12, so then, every one of us, and by the way, let me give you a little PS that just flashed through my mind. I trust God did it. I don't know why, because someone might be sitting there. I don't know why he did it. I want to clarify something for you, that if I had to sell my library, that's my privilege to sell my library, and my wife and children have nothing to say about it. I am the breadwinner in my family, and I call the shots when it comes to that. And if I say it goes, and it's my business to trust God for them. Do you understand? I am the father. I am the head of that home. It is my business to trust my living Savior to take care of them. And I do not have to fudge or apologize for how I handle his stewardship of his time and all that he's given me. Does that make sense for you? And thus we have, it fits good, doesn't it? Romans 14, verse 12, so then every one of us shall give account. Give account of whom? To whom? To God. And the word give account there is the word for a word spoken. It means a reason. It means speech that displays the reason, how one thinks. And when it's used here, it means an account, to use it figuratively or mentally, instead of counting up on a piece of paper. It means the relationship and the reasons of any transaction. What was the relationship you had in the transaction, and why did you do it? To give an account. What was your relationship? To whom was it to? You see? And what are the reasons that you did that? And thus it's translated an explanation, an account, that you and I must give in a personal account to God. A personal basis for my relationships to things and my reasons I did them. I must give an account. I must give an account. Personally, I must give an account. I can't bring anyone else into the picture. I must give it. No one else can do it for me. Would you go with me to Hebrews chapter 4? Hebrews chapter 4, let me just touch on this again for us. In Hebrews chapter 4, would you look with me in verse 13? Neither is there any creature that is not manifest in his sight, but all things are naked and open unto the eyes of him whom we have to do. There is no being alive that is not manifest and revealed to him. All things are naked, all things are open unto his eyes, the eyes of him with whom we have to do. Do you see the little last three words, have to do? Have to do is the word account. The account we have to give, the account to be given. We have to give an account to him. He sees us. You must give an account to him. But the one whom we have to do, the one whom we owe an accounting, we owe a basis of what was our relationships and what was the reasons, we owe it to him. With whom we have to do, with whom we have an account to be given. Would you go with me to Hebrews 13? Do you know we sing a hymn, don't we? Occasionally in communion, especially that My Lord Jesus Christ demands my soul, my life, my all. Do you mean it when you sing it? He demands my all. He gets my all. Man, he loves it when you trust him like that. God will never do anything bad. God can't be bad. God can only be good. We being evil, he being good. He only can be good. He's great. He's glorious. And when you and I give our frail, faulty devotion to him, he just delights in our little and his greatness. He just delights in it. Hebrews 13. Would you notice with me in verse 17? Obey them that have the rule over you and submit yourselves, for they watch for your souls, as they that, M-U-S-T, them that must, what must they do? They must give an account. They must tell of the relationship and the reasons. You have the same thing similarly in James 3:1. Let no man ever strive to be. Don't be a teacher without thinking what you're doing. Why? Because you must give account. You have the greater what? The greater condemnation on you. The greater condemnation. You want the responsibility, you pay the price for it. And when a man steps into leadership, whatever, beloved, he pays the price of one who must give an account. Let me take it over in another way. I just used it a minute ago. When I become the head of my family, I am one who must give an account. I must give an account. You believe it. And when there are officers in the church, whether they like it ready or not, they must give an account for how they handled this people, how they handled this property. They must give an account. Their attitude, their relationships, their reasons, they must give an account. Therefore, knowing they must give the account, God says, pray for them and don't buck them, because I'm going to judge them. Not you're going to judge them. I'm going to judge them. Revelation chapter 2 and 3, every single angel, every single messenger that stands in the pulpit of my church, his local church, is mine. And they are accountable personally to me, not to you, to me. Man, that's sobering. Do you understand what I just said? And you sit down, I'm afraid of you. I'm rightly afraid of him, I hope. Do you understand that? So don't. You need to understand, this isn't a religious game here. We aren't out to be religious. We aren't out to be big. We don't need 50 buses. We don't need to have 1,000 people and fill pews and whatever. That is not the basis of the work of God, nor the God of the work. And we need to see it. Yeah, no. Anyway, I didn't. Psalm 66. Psalm 66. Would you notice the verse with me that you would find in Psalm 66 and verse 18? If I have my designs out, if I am purposing, if I regard iniquity, if I regard, the word iniquity means a breath, and thus it means nothingness. And it means wickedness, sinfulness, falsity, all of it is treated as a breath, as nothingness. It means it has no stability, it has no substance to it. It says nothing, a breath. If I regard iniquity, that which is evil, which has no substance in my heart, if I set my design and my aim at it, what will the Lord do? What won't he do better? He won't hear. He won't hear. You're shooting in the wrong direction, he said. I'm over here. Aim at me. Not aim at that. Aim at me. I won't hear you when you do that. Doesn't mean I don't hear you, but I'm not going to respond. Not like you'd like. Would you look with me in? There's a responsibility that goes with things, and then just to give you one illustration, Proverbs chapter 28, to give you the thought of it or the idea of it. Would you notice in book of Proverbs, chapter 28, and look at verse 13, if you would. He that covereth his sin, that's a negative thing, don't do it, don't do it, don't cover sin, shall not what? Prosper. If I regard iniquity in my heart, the Lord won't hear me. If I go and cover sin, who covers sin? The person covers sin. If the person covers sin, God will not prosper. Verse the positive part. Verse, but whoso confesseth, that's my part to confess. To forsake, that's part my part to forsake. Those people will find mercy. It's my part to confess, my part to forsake, my part not to cover. There's a responsibility that goes with things. And we need to encourage irresponsible, we do not need to encourage irresponsible people to continue in their irresponsibility and to expand their irresponsibility while making irresponsibility behavior respectable. Want me to run through that again? You don't want to go and encourage people to be irresponsible. And thus, if you do, then they are irresponsible and they expand, they enlarge their irresponsibility. In the process, we are making irresponsibility, the irresponsible behavior of people, we're making it respectable, and it's all right to be irresponsible. Do you know how hard it is to get people to be responsible today? It's a hard go. Not many are responsible people. Young people, that's why mom and dad gets after you for things. They're trying to get you to teach you responsibility. Pick up your underwear, make your bed, empty the whatever you do. They're trying to teach you some measure of responsibility. Why? Because if you don't learn it, you're going to go right into adulthood. And so you've learned to pick up your underwear. Maybe. But on the other hand, you see, you haven't developed, you become irresponsible someplace else as you grow up. So we want to practice that. Let me just do a little quick thought for you. You know the fellow Job. Job is a very interesting fellow, he is. And I'd like you perhaps to turn with me just briefly to Job chapter 36. The book of Job chapter 36. You remember Job is a man that's been hard hit. He has three friends. And his three friends want to help him. They want to do what they can to help him. And they try to give advice and counsel as best they know it. But you see, Job has been hard hit by God, not only physically, but in his family conditions. God really gave him a belt. He allowed the devil to get him. And when a man's hard hit like that, we get rid of all the airs. We get rid of all the unreality. We stop making believe and playing games, and Job was down to where the rubber hits the road. not a lot of theological jargon. It wasn't pious platitudes. It wasn't principles that were never practiced. It was right where the world was. And he was facing reality. He was facing God. And the men around him did not know of such a crisis, of such a movement of God that would bring a man down to that place. And so they tried their best to talk to Job, to counsel Job. But you see, Job had moved into another realm. And they just couldn't follow him. They couldn't deal with him, you see. And thus you have in Job chapter 36, you have Elihu speaking, and he speaks in a tender way, and he's trying to help Job. And would you start with me perhaps in just looking, start in verse 7, "He withdraweth not his eyes from the righteous, but with kings they are on the throne, yea, he doth establish them forever, and they are exalted. And if they be bound in fetters and be holden in cords of affliction, and then he showeth them their work and their transgression, that they have succeeded." The word "succeeded" means to be proud. He shows them, he teaches them that they're proud. That's a loving God who teaches us with pride, proud. He could just let us go to hell proud and then discover that pride didn't pay. But he doesn't. He teaches us. He teaches about pride. He teaches and shows us our pride. And do you know how many things are generated in our life by pride? Pride to protect us, to cover us. Job's out of that realm. Job's down at the bottom. He's stripped naked before whose eyes we have to do. He must give an account, and he's pulling in his pockets. He can't pull anything out. What a lovely place to be in. Would you look with me in verse 10? "He openeth also their ear to discipline, to correct, to teach. And he commanded that they commandeth that they return from iniquity." And there's the same word iniquity, by the way, breath. "He commands that they return from it." That means they must have drifted away from God and got tied up in the wrong relationship for the wrong reasons. God says return. He opens their ears so they hear. How does he do that? With all kinds of ways to get you to pay attention. Verse 12, "But if they obey not, they perish by the sword, and they shall die without knowledge. But the hypocrites in heart heap up wrath. They cry not when he bindeth them. They die in youth, and their life is among the unclean." Would you skip down with me, if you would, over to verse 18. "Because there is wrath, beware lest he take thee away with his stroke. Then a great ransom cannot deliver thee." You can't buy your way out. "Will he redeem thy riches?" Can you cash in your bonds? Can you do it with God and say, "God, here it is"? God says, "No, you can't buy it. You can't buy it." "Will he redeem thy riches?" No, not gold, nor all the forces of strength. "Desire not the night when people are cut off in their place." That means if I could just die, I'd escape. No, you won't. You'll just be ushered into the reality of it instantly. No. Therefore, verse 21, "Take heed, regard not iniquity." Regard, there's your word again. Regard not iniquity. Regard not breath, emptiness, nothingness. "For this hast thou chosen rather than affliction." You've chosen the right path. You're looking in the right way. Verse 22, "Behold, God exalteth by his power." In his power, God is exalted. Who teaches like God? Who is like him as a teacher? Who teaches us like he does? Verse 26, "Behold, God is great, and we know him not, neither can the number of his years be searched out." My God is a great God. Do you know it isn't your reason, it isn't your intellect, it isn't your science, it isn't your math, it isn't your English that you reach God? And a man can't teach someone intellect, morality. It's something God has to do inside a person. You can show them morality, but God has to do it. God has to do that. And so with all the efforts, and you know when people are teaching most, they are very unconscious of it. Very unconscious of it. It just is. Job was a hard-hit man, and he hit reality. May God hit you, and may God hit me hard like that, so that I hit reality. Oh, God, help me. Help me not be a clod. Oh, God, help me burn out for God. Help me burn out for Him, you see. I don't know.
I trust that help. And in the book of Job, remember, Job is writing. Job has experiencing, and God is recording that which happened to Job. And in Job's life, he certainly had a lot going for him. He had a lot happen to him. He surely did. And we shared together last time that we had to be careful about iniquity and regarding it in our heart. And here you have the three friends that came to help Job. They spent 7 days just silent in his presence when they met him. His blight, his circumstances were so bad in their eyes that they had nothing to say. And they sat in silence until all their emotional movement was subdued. And then when their emotions had been put in order and they weren't in the way, then they spoke to Job. Their emotions were put aside. It's a good thing for us to remember. Sometimes we say a lot of things emotionally in a given crisis. We don't have time to think. We speak emotionally. And sometimes it pays just to be still and say nothing till you've got your emotions in order, and then speak intelligently and carefully. And Job's three friends did that. And Zophar is speaking in chapter 20. And the main thought is, his idea is that the wicked must have their portion, their place in this present world. And Job, you're on an emotional high. You're ignoring the truth of the future. In other words, you're way up here in your thinking, and you aren't looking down the road here far enough. And so he says, picking up the thought in verse 4, "Knowest thou not this of old, since man was placed upon earth, that the triumphing of the wicked is short? The joy of the hypocrite is but for a moment." Tells you two things, among other things. It tells you, one, that the wicked can have their day. The wicked can have their day on top. Their day of victory. Their day of conquest. It says that. It also tells us that the hypocrite can have his day of happiness. It says that. But it says the wicked's triumph is short, and the joy of the hypocrite is but for a moment. And would you just take it a little further, going down to verse 6, "Though his excellency mount up to heaven, to the heavens, and his head reach unto the clouds, yet he shall perish forever." Now that gives you an illustration of verse 5, though he would go all the way up to the clouds. Verse 7, "Yet he shall perish forever like his own dung." That's pretty sobering, isn't it? A man brings himself up, a man puts his very best shot into it, and he gets it in this life, position, prestige, power, privilege, gets it all done, and he dies. Just like his dung, it dies. No good. No good. Sobering, isn't it? Would you notice in the end of verse 7, "They which have seen him shall say," those that used to know him when he lived, who went so high, so great, "Where is he?" Where is he? Where is he? He's just gone, disappeared, forgotten. Where is he? Big name, big shot, big to-do, and tomorrow morning it's all gone. Where is he? Forgot all about it. He ever lived. We remember some, Alexander the Great, a little bit of history, but Alexander the Great is far from being on our mind. Day in, day out, week in and week out, Alexander the Great isn't on our mind. And neither are millions and millions and millions of other people who lived. You don't even know they ever were. And they were. And so, Job's friends are failing to discern that Job has been hit, like we said last time, hard by God. God hit him hard. God allowed him to get hit hard. And the only way that Job can handle this is by having a very strict confidence in God. Now hear me. Job's been hit. He got hit. God allowed him to get hit. Now what do you do? Now Job here is three dear friends. And by the way, without getting into this study at all, Job, I remember we did a little thing in it, a study. I want to remind you of the magnificence of the intelligence of the three friends of Job. They were highly educated, intelligent, biblical men. They really were. And if you wanted to know what kind of knowledge men had in that day, in the days of Abraham, read this book of Job and you'll find out they were keen about life. They weren't stupid. They were extremely intelligent about why they were here and what was going on. Marvelous. But Job was moved to a new level. God did something to the man. And so Job, look with me, hold your finger, just go with me to Job chapter 1 for a moment. Let me illustrate this confidence. And it's the only thing that you must have. You must get to the place. And I must get to the place where I have a strict confidence in God Almighty, period. Not a strict confidence in God plus my husband, God plus my job, God plus my health, God plus my wife, God plus my children, God plus my future, God plus plus. God has to kick the props out of us if we're to know where Job is and where Job speaks from. And in Job chapter 1, would you notice with me in verse 21, speaking Job in the condition that he's in when his three friends come, and said, "Naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." That's his attitude. You lost your children, you lost your farm, you lost your house, you lost your health. Blessed be the name of the Lord who did whatever he does. Whether he gives or he adds, it's his business. Blessed be his name. He never ceases to be God. He never ceases to be good. He never ceases to be great. He never ceases to be involved, no matter what. Blessed be his name, no matter what I see, no matter what I feel, no matter what I hear. Blessed be his name. Would you look at me in chapter 2? Book of Job, chapter 2. And would you note with me in verse 10? "But he said unto her, Thou speakest," to his wife, "thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. What? Shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil? In all this, did not Job sin with his lips?" He said, "Woman, be quiet. You're out of place. You aren't understanding what's going on. You're falsely accusing God and misunderstanding God. Shame on you. You're being like other women. You should know better than that." How many times that is the case, where someone's hitting it and the other one isn't seeing it and the other one gives the wrong advice. Sincere, sincere advice, sincere heart, but they're all wrong. Just wrong, missing the whole point of what's going on. How easy that is to do, is it not? How easy it is to open our mouth and talk about something, and we're giving the wrong advice at the most critical time, instead of being on target sometime, we need to be like Job's friends and shut up for 7 days until we get it, see it straight. If it takes 14 days, then wait 14 till you see it straight. Don't speak till you understand. Don't speak till you got it, till you got it clear. Job chapter 13. Or better than that, chapter 13. Would you notice in Job chapter 13, Job makes a statement, you'll catch him running through it. I'm just trying to hit him a little bit. In verse 15, though he slay me, though he take my life, you've taken my children, my herds, my health, if you even take my life, what would he do? I'll trust him. I'll trust him. Is that your attitude to trial, test, trouble? Is that how you handle your growing up, your going on? Do you handle it that way? How do you handle it? Though he slay me, I am confident, absolutely settled. The only recourse, the only reason, the only way out, the only thing logically to do, biblically, historically, and rightly, is I will trust him. Job chapter 23. Oh, to get God, to get his will in this thing that Job is in. Like David of old, David said, didn't he? Trust in the Lord at all times. Pour out your heart before him. Pour out your heart before him. Job said, there's only one, trust in him. Pour out my heart, and he did. That's what he's doing. Chapter 23. And as you begin the 23rd chapter, Job hard hit and hit hard. Job said to go to the basic of things, the basis of things. He isn't trusting his reasonings. My, how your reasonings can foul you up. What you think, the thoughts that we have, how crooked they are, how many ingredients are mixed in them that don't make biblically eternal sentences. There's just words and clauses and paragraphs that are out of place. We got a piece of truth, and then we got a big whole lot of words, and then another piece of truth. But it isn't all locked together. And Job said, I don't trust my reasonings. I don't trust religious activity. I don't trust religious activity. My three friends, I have come to the wit's end. What do you mean, my wit's end? I've come to the place where I have to face reality just as it is. Religiousness and reason's no good. I've got to face reality as reality really is. The real me, the real world, the real God, real time, real eternity. God, you've got to do something with me, something in me. And therefore, in chapter 23, would you look with me in verse 8? Listen to Job. Verse 8. Behold, I go forward, but he is not there. And backward, but I cannot perceive him. On the left hand, where he doth work, but I cannot behold him. He hideth himself on the right hand, that I cannot see him. Does God see? Yes. Is God seen to be missing? Yes. Is God silent? Yes. Is God seen to be slow? Yes. Is he? No. God can't be fast nor slow. He is always on time. He is always moving at the eternal pace of God, and he always moves exactly as God should move. He never needs to hurry. He's never late. He's never delayed. He's always moving perfectly on time. In time. I trust you and I learn that more and more so that we love him more, we trust him more. And here is Job in the dark, in the depth of his trial, his test. There's no word from God. Word from his three friends, but no word from God. Shouldn't God say something? Just give me an explanation. Give me something to understand why all of this, all of a sudden, all at once. There's no need to put on any airs, said Job. I've passed the point of that. I don't need to keep up any appearances. I've passed the point of that. There's no need of putting on cosmetic makeup. My body looks such a mess, it's hopeless. I smell like I look. I stink with sickness, disease. My sores run. I don't have any appearances anymore to cover. I'm in reality. No more makeup. No more garb. No more chit-chat. I'm right where it has to be. And I can't seem to find God when I'm there. Is God gone on vacation? Just because God doesn't say something, that doesn't mean he isn't around? Because God doesn't do something, God doesn't mean... Because you don't see God doing something doesn't mean that God isn't. And so Job's in that place. And by the way, that's where real prayer takes place. It's when you and I reach that place that real prayer takes place. You see, there's no more pious platitudes. There's no more nice phrases. It's, oh God, help me. I remember in an ordination service that I had, and I had the prayer in it. Now, you think you should have a nice prayer. I didn't have a nice prayer. I remember it, never forgot it. I was asked to pray at that time when all the hands were on that man's head, recognizing and setting him apart. And I just never forgot. I just spoke to God straightway, crude, rough, abrupt. God, here's a man. And here's the world he lives in. And here's the church he has to serve in. Now, God, you've got to do something. And if you don't do it, we're in hot water. We're in trouble. And I know it was not very nice prayer, a very crude prayer. But it was down to the nitty-gritty where that's where it was. And men may not have understood it and said, that wasn't very smooth or eloquent. I know it wasn't. I know it wasn't. But oh my. We were trying to touch where the dirt, the tire hits the road, and there was no time to play any games then, you see. And when God gets us in that place, beloved, we pray. And we get rid of the cliches, we get rid of all the fears of, did I say it right? Man, you speak, and you say, oh my God, save me, oh my God, help me, oh my God, deliver me. And it starts getting down to where it is. It starts getting right down to the depths of your soul. Oh God, oh wretched man that I am, in me dwelleth no good thing. See? Down to where it counts. Down to where all the veneer is stripped aside as much as it can be. And that's when men pray. That's when people pray. All that's when it is. That's when it goes. All the rest is a lot of nice words sometime. And we need nice words with God. Blessed be his name. We're supposed to speak well of him. But I'll tell you, that's where the power is. That's where the power, when you and I touch bottom, touch reality. When you touch reality, you're getting to the doorway of touching God. And so here in the book of Job, and by the way, I should share another thought with you that might be helpful. Do you know, man discovers so many things. We certainly have. We're going to look at it in a moment. He knows so many things. He just has uncovered scientifically and medically and just so many, many things that we have in our day, that we have books and volumes you couldn't read them all that are written, and you couldn't keep up with those that are being written.
Not even in one field of science, probably, could you keep up with the advancement in the science. And with all of our knowledge and with all of that, you know, there's something marvelously, marvelously exciting about it, that man has no explanation for all the facts he uncovers. He has no explanation for them. You see, for such is lacking. And so a learned person who's truly learned, who truly gets in the place, they have to face up to what? They have to confess that they're ignorant. That when they've got all their knowledge and all their pieces, all they've got them is spread out on the table, but they can't really put them together. Where they came from, why they're here, and how they all go together. They don't know that. They have no explanation for what they discover. You see, because God's left out. And a real man, a woman who is truly in the study of the sciences, has to come to the place that we have discovered in all these things, but we don't have an explanation of why they exist. We only know the ABCs and all the rest of the alphabet and all the rest of the words. We haven't even touched on it yet in our day. Haven't scratched the surface of knowledge. And when it's all done, if we could see all of the knowledge that could be had and all of the facts that could be conjured up and put to work, we still don't have an explanation of why they exist. They'll discover a new truth, a new fact about electricity, about science, about molecular science, and all kinds of sciences. And when they're all done, they can't put them together. They don't know why they're going to discover the next thing. They don't know where it fits, how it fits. Look with me, if you would, in Job 28. Would you notice chapter 28 is telling us that man's work and man's wisdom to obtain earthly riches, surely there is a vein or a mine for the silver and a place for gold where they find it. Iron is taken out of the earth and brass is molten out of the stone.